From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block. This week, NPR's Michael Sullivan has been traveling along the fabled Mekong River, visiting with many of the people who live and depend on it. Today, Michael visits Thailand and Laos, on opposite sides of the river, known locally as the Menam-kong. Historically, the two countries have always followed divergent paths, a divergence that grew during the Vietnam War and continues to this day.
There's a part of northern Thailand so synonymous with the drug trade, they've built a museum about it.
The Golden Triangle soon became a leading center of the world's illicit drug trade. Early government efforts to control drug production and trade met with little success. Traffickers moved freely along the long, ill-defined and insecure borders. And opium was the sole cash crop for poor hill villages, remote from markets and roads.
As history lessons go, it's not bad, but for pure visuals, the Opium Museum can't even begin to compete with the view from a nearby hill and the description from longtime resident Yutana Tungkaburi.
You can see on your left-hand side is it Myanmar on your left, and on your right is it Laos, and we are here in Thailand on the Mekong River. Three countries meet here, and you can see many opium is produced from Myanmar. And then they come along the Mekong River to Thailand. And some of opium is produced from Laos. They also come along the Mekong River to the Golden Triangle. And then Thailand is like the opium market.
Opium that found its way to the U.S. and Europe in its more refined form is heroin. But Afghanistan provides most of the world's opium these days. The Thai government, with help from abroad, has put a major dent in the opium trade here. The Golden Triangle rebranded, in Thailand at least, as a tourist destination. Hordes of travelers, mostly Europeans, now pack the tourist boats and souvenir stands along this stretch of the Mekong. Smaller boats take gamblers, mostly Asian, to casinos across the river. Thai tourists prefer the casinos on the Myanmar side. The Chinese flock to the new Gold Dome Casino on the Laos side. And not everyone in Laos is happy to see them, like this souvenir vendor who doesn't want to give her name.
In casino, all Chinese. That area is Chinese, this area is Laos.
You don't want the Chinese to come?
Yeah. It's not good if many Chinese come.
This antipathy toward China and the Chinese is something you hear frequently in Laos. In the last century, a French colony. In this century, some fear, a Chinese one. Many Laotians were proud when their country hosted the Southeast Asian Games in December, but others wondered whether the honor came at too high a price. The games were held at a spanking new stadium complex in the capital, Vientiane, a stadium built and paid for by China. In return, many Laotians say, the government promised China a good chunk of land in Vientiane for a satellite city to accommodate some of China's growing population. It's a sensitive topic in Laos, and talking about it openly all but guarantees a visit from the police, even as the government strenuously denies making such a deal. But many here are quietly seething and embarrassed. "We are helpless," one businessman said bitterly. "Our ideological brothers, China and Vietnam, are strong," he said, "and we are weak. What can we do?" It's a problem largely of the government's own making. After the communist takeover in 1975, many of the country's best and brightest fled, a time when Laos was plunged literally into darkness, when Soviet-style planning made an already poor country even poorer. The Laotians don't have to look far to see how things could have been different. On the Thai side of the Mekong, the electricity is constant, the roads modern, and rice farmers like 28-year-old Chinawat Manoma are happy with their lot. Chinawat says things are much better than they were in his parents' time. New farming techniques, new seeds, and easy loans have helped make Thailand the world's largest rice exporter, and that's helped make Chinawat solidly middle class, with a new house, two TVs, and two tractors, which he rents out to other farmers. And his 7-year-old daughter, he says proudly, is already in an elite school, thanks to a strong showing in a nationwide exam. He predicts she will be the first in the family to graduate from university. Not bad, considering her grandparents didn't finish grade school. Back on the Laos side of the Mekong, Thai music blares from the speaker at a riverside bar in the southern town of Takek. The Laotian patrons nurse their beers as they stare with some envy at the new cars, new motorcycles, and new businesses on the Thai side. It's clear Laos lags far behind Thailand in terms of development. It's also clear it's not entirely the government's fault. 40 miles to the east of the Mekong River, in the soaring limestone formations near the border with Vietnam, bomb disposal teams try to clear leftover ordnance from the Vietnam War. The U.S. was never officially at war with Laos, but it dropped more bombs here than it did on all of Vietnam, an estimated 1.6 million tons. The goal was to disrupt Vietnamese supply lines along the Ho Chi Minh Trail, but not all the ordnance did what it was supposed to.
The estimate is that around 30% of all munitions at that period did not detonate. So that means that there's an awful lot still remaining, and it's pretty easy to see.
David Hayter is country director for the Mines Advisory Group in Laos. He says leftover ordnance still kills or maims dozens of Laotians every year. Farmers plowing their fields, children playing with the rusted tennis ball-sized cluster bombs they find in the forest, or poor villagers trying to sell the metal and explosives inside for scrap. In addition to the human cost, says Hayter, there's the economic cost of unexploded ordnance.
A lot of agricultural land is denied to people because of the presence of UXO. And this is the main problem with it, really, is that it promotes and prolongs poverty because people can't do what they need to do. And even if they farm it, knowing that UXO is present, they will not farm deeply enough to get the best quality crops.
The U.S. government is now one of the most generous donors to programs like this one, but it will take many decades and many millions of dollars more before the problem of unexploded ordnance is solved. Back on the Mekong River, a few hours to the south, what could be an opportunity for Laos at a place not kind to the colonial rulers here in the past. The French had big plans for the Mekong while they were the colonial power here. They were going to use the Mekong, which they called our river, to extend their economic and political reach all the way up into southern China. The river was going to be a major transportation link and a way for French naval vessels to get upriver and extend their military power as well. But then they got here to the Kon Pa Peng Falls, just on the Lao-Cambodian border, and it was here that they realized that their plan wasn't going to work, because this series of waterfalls, some as high as 45 feet, almost three-quarters of a mile long, are too high and too fast and too rocky to get up or to get around. And the French tried for years to figure out a way to do so, but they never did. The Laotian government hopes to do better with its plan. It wants to dam one channel of the falls to generate hydropower, part of a larger scheme to turn Laos into what the government calls the battery of Southeast Asia, selling power to its energy-hungry neighbors, Thailand and Vietnam. The Laotians and Cambodians are planning 11 dams on the Mekong and its tributaries, and that alarms some who worry what damming might mean for fish migration in one of the world's most productive fisheries. Jeremy Bird heads the Mekong River Commission in the Laotian capital, Vientiane.
Unlike North America, where the issue is relating to six or seven species of salmon-type fish, there are about 60 to 70 commercially important migratory species in the Mekong. And I think the key thing to remember, this is not just an issue of conservation of species. This is an issue where it is directly linked to the social well-being and the livelihoods of people that depend upon it.
In Cambodia, for example, where 70% of the population depends on fish as their main source of protein, our next destination on our journey down the Mekong. Michael Sullivan, NPR News.